This is the February 25 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day will include Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, Philip Shaw from Agridome. He's in Ontario, Canada. And we'll talk also today with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, you can visit that website now to order your tickets for the Spring Outlook that's coming up on the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The full-day event is just $25, including your meals and the Farm Doc team, the Will Ag panelist. You can also call 217-333-7300 during regular business hours. Jim McCormick now joins us from AgMarket.net here on Commodity Week. Jim, thank you for taking your time on a Friday morning early to talk about the marketplace. I want to talk about volatility in the marketplace and how producers should manage what has been happening at these very high prices. A spike high happened yesterday. I frankly, as most of our listeners will know, do market a crop. The coming year, this spring, will be soybeans, and I have soybean sales made to about 30%. And I went yesterday to make a sale. I saw midday, I think it was about 1450 when I took a quick look. Actually, it must have been around 1485. And then I saw that there was a 1555 topper somewhere in that neighborhood of the November, my last highest sales in the $14 run. And I thought, well, I guess I missed that, but I missed the sale. And I know better, Jim, because trying to catch highs are really hard. I just saw that happen yesterday and it felt like something I should do. I don't know how you handle all of this kind of stress when you're talking to clients and how you advise them through the process.
Well, I think the first thing, what you want to try to do is make price points that you're wanting to sell it at. Like you said, you had an idea where you wanted to sell at a price point, but you almost need to put that order working ahead of time. We like to call it wish orders, in essence, because in the heat of the battle, when the market is as emotional as it was yesterday, I think everyone deep down knew these levels were not going to last. I think what shocked a lot of people is how quick the price came down. But it's very hard to make that calculation in the heat of, people were talking multiple days of limit up. So the game plan right now, I think, to really take the stress out of the marketing is come up with a game plan ahead of time and then execute it, have the orders working. But also remember, there's a lot of tools in the toolbox that can take some of that stress out. We've been encouraging a lot of producers out there to use options as a way to mitigate the risk. Sell cash, maybe buy some calls, Todd. On the other hand, consider maybe buying puts, the short-dated puts, if you want to put a floor under it, but leave the top side open. There's no doubt about it. With the way we traded yesterday, it really feels like we at least put in a temporary top. That was a classic emotional move up and then failure. But, when you look what's going on in Ukraine, we're only, 48 hours into this invasion. This is probably just in the early stages of the battle. And I think you're going to get a lot more volatility. So I'm guessing you'll have a shot of selling those beans back up near 1550, but it may be a little ways down the line.
Indeed. And for me, and I'll make this note, because it's tough enough for me to have to market a crop and talk about things unbiasedly as best I can on the air. I do not trade in the market itself. So for me, everything is always in the cash market. However, even in that case, you can put in those orders, particularly I'm fearful sometimes of the overnight trade and have caught in the overnight trade an order to fill for a cash sale for sure. So it seems like something that's pretty important to do. Now let's come back to this Ukraine-Russia issue just a little bit and what it can do to the marketplace. You say there might be some more yet to come in the market. Lots of people in the outside markets trading this, or what happened yesterday and trying to get a feel for where the money's coming from and how it might ensue as we trade through Ukraine-Russia and changes in that invasion plan.
Well, it looked like a lot of money had come into a lot of these assets looking for, after the invasion came in, anticipating the invasion and looking for some hardcore tariffs or sanctions that really could cripple Russia. At this point, those sanctions have not come in. At this point, as far as I know, we're still not, you know, they're still allowing Russia to sell oil and energy right now. There is, you know, there are some people who are thinking maybe we're going to try to block Russia from selling wheat and grain and other products. That hasn't happened yet. So it kind of felt like you had a lot of spec money coming here looking for this big hammer drop, at least, that was really going to tighten up the world global supply. It didn't happen, and now some of that money's coming back out. But what I mean by the situation, by all accounts that I read, Todd, is, you know, there's a very good shot, unfortunately, that, you know, Putin will have control of Kyiv, the main, you know, the capital of the country by this weekend. But, you know, the difference we've got is when Russia kind of helped and took over Crimea and over that, those ancestries of those populace was from Russia. The further west you go, that's more Polish ancestry. They're very worried about being invaded by, you know, is this just one step of game one? So I think you're going to see a lot of more kind of the stuff the United States fought in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's going to be more of a guerrilla warfare. Is that going to allow them to get this crop planted? They still got to get the crop planted. They are the biggest sunflower oil producer in the world. They're one of the biggest regions that export. A third of the world's wheat supply comes out of that portion of the world. So even if, you know, tensions die down, are you still going to get boats willing to go into those ports? We just don't know. I think there's a lot of assumptions and hope, but, you know, the odds tell me that this is going to be a long, drawn-out conflict, unfortunately, and that's going to keep the grain prices volatile because the world needs that supply. If that supply is there, not there, somebody else has got to, you know, feed the world.
So it's easy to understand why wheat and corn reacted so violently in the marketplace. Soybeans are less so because Ukraine nor Russia play very much of a role in soybeans on the global stage. Russia for wheat is, I believe, number one in the export market, and Ukraine is number four for corn. So that's pretty easy to understand. Why do we think soybeans managed such moves yesterday?
As like I said, the Ukraine is the world's biggest producer of sunflower oil. I think they're in the top 10 of exporting that veg oil. So it's the same situation as the wheat. Can you get the wheat harvested? Can you get the corn planted? Can you get that veg oil crop planted? If you look what happened, you know, on the market up, the beans are going up, but what was really moving higher the last couple of days was the bean oil. So part of the bean rally was more following up the run-up in the bean oil on the veg oil argument. Palm oil going into this conflict, Malaysian palm oil was trading at all-time highs. So that's why the beans are reacting. They're reacting to the potential tightness of veg oil world supplies.
What else are you watching in the marketplace? For instance, this week on the closing market report, more than once, the weather analyst, the meteorologist, have said, rainfall is finally coming in Argentina. That crop actually has time, particularly for soybeans, to rebuild itself. Are we worried about issues there being mitigated by rainfall?
I think that's partly one of the weaknesses. As we're closing out the week, we are seeing some weakness in the bean market, well, in all the markets, but specifically the bean market. We saw a little bit of weakness yesterday when the beans had a dramatic reversal. A lot of people were pointing exactly to that point, Todd, that there is some rain in parts of Argentina. It's probably too little too late for the corn, but it could help the bean crop. And I think the trade needs to be very, very concerned, not necessarily concerned, but cognizant of what happened a year ago. A year ago, you know, the Brazilian crop got beat up really bad. They dropped that Brazilian bean crop to like 129. And, you know, when it was all said and done, it wasn't quite as bad as the rhetoric put it at, closer to 138. This market has dropped this South American crop so, so hard. I think you're getting a little bit of fear that maybe they've overshot the runway a little bit and this crop's going to come back up a little bit as harvest really moves south. And maybe that's that combined with just the emotional top being put in, you're seeing money come out of the market.
Any final word before I let you go?
My final word right now would be for the producers, Todd, is, you know, be prepared for volatility this year. It is going to get hot and volatile this summer. We just talked about South American weather. It's improving. But if you look what's going on in the United States, some of the weather guys I've been reading are arguing or fearful that maybe that drought we're seeing in the Western is going to stick around this summer. And we could be setting up for, especially for the Western Corn Belt, a warm, hot, dry summer. If this demand shifts around and we lose some production or export capacity out of the Ukraine, that demand is going to come to the United States. It will drop our ending stocks very, very tight. That is going to put the pressure on to make sure we get at least 90 million acres of corn and a trend plus crop to meet that demand. So the volatility is only going to increase, but that's going to give you some multiple years potential opportunity, to market multiple years. I think you've got potentially one more good surge later on in spring, summer, but you don't want to just be prepared to sell the 22 crop. You want to be prepared to sell some 23 and possibly even the 24 crop if it surges high enough.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
That's Jim McCormick. He is with AgMarket.net. Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, is here, too, for our Commodity Week program. Thank you, Chuck, for taking your time on a busy Friday morning to talk with me for just a bit. I appreciate that. We certainly are in historic times across the planet and, indeed, in trade in Chicago as well, I suppose.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting and wild week, and certainly, as a producer, we've been whipshod from limit up moves to almost limit down moves within the same 3 or 4 day period, Todd. So, you know, as a producer, just volatility's here. I don't think it's going to go away as we move into our planting season. And, gosh, there's some opportunities here, but it's not going to be an easy one to go work through the process of planting and what you're going to plant, your crop insurance. As a producer myself, gosh, it makes every day a new day with new uncertainty, new opportunities.
So on that note, because Risk Management Commodities does deal with crop insurance, I checked with Gary Schnicke yesterday, thinking about the volatility index, which is set in the last 5 trading days of the month of February. So we have one more day left on Monday to set what that volatility index will look like. I want to say that last year it was 0.2 or 0.21. This year, it's interesting to look at. The first 2 trading days averaged 0.19. Yesterday, if you just look at the one day, it was 0.23. And I wanted to know from Gary if there was a way we could gauge what that might look like. So I wrote him a note, and he wrote me back that if you use just the bar chart volatility number for soybeans, which was 0.23 from yesterday, RP85 Enterprise on a Champaign County farm would be $16.28 an acre. However, if you use the 0.19 from the previous 2 days, I want to say that it was $13, and it is $13.40. So that volatility index makes a big difference in the per acre cost of crop insurance. We'll know that by the time we get to Monday, but will it change the way, do you think, that producers have to think about how much crop insurance they purchase?
We started out with some, you know, really good prices for the crop insurance, one of the highest ever for soybeans. And it's unfortunate, I guess, that this last week when they set the volatility, we've seen this really extreme moves. But it comes down to, and I was discussing this with my son, on which, you know, program we're going to take in crop insurance. We're insuring a really high value crop. So you might look at it and go, gosh, those premiums are extremely high. But if we had $4 corn and, you know, we had $8 beans, our premium would be a lot less, but we would not be able to, you know, guarantee much revenue. So I think you have to take a step back and look at the value of this crop. I think also the crop insurance is important with the extreme volatility. We could have record high prices in the end of summer of 22 if we have any weather events. On the other hand, with what's going on in the world and the turmoil, or if we grow a great crop, we could probably go pretty much significantly lower. So a lot of risk either way, Todd, but I'm in the camp of you got a high value product, and in my mind, you want to use good insurance to protect that value.
What have you been thinking about as it relates to the Russia-Ukraine issue and how it might impact trade over the coming year?
One of my thoughts as a farmer is they're going to enter into the, you know, planting season here in a month or 5 weeks. It's going to be extremely difficult with an occupying army, or if the Russians take completely over. I just don't know what kind of crop is going to come out of that area. You know, I think could see maybe they don't plant much of anything. I don't know if they're going to put a gun to the Ukrainian farmer's head and say, go out there and plant or else. So I have real concerns about one of our biggest producers in the world of corn, fifth biggest producer, fourth biggest producer of wheat, exactly how much of a crop is going to come out of that region as we look at the end of 22 growing season.
How do you put all of that into your current marketing plans?
It's going to be a real challenge to get, you know, what we need to do accomplished, but I think you have to use a combination of tools here. You got to look at sell some things for profit, things we've forward contracted. We want guys to cover with call options because of the possibility of, you know, some kind of weather event. The other tool that we're going to use a lot of, and some guys have already started, is put options. It doesn't give you the greatest floor, but after you've seen beans move, you know, a dollar overnight, it gives you peace of mind. And I think we just have to have a plan to cover our bases, and that allows us to not get too upset when we have a week like we had this week.
The Ag Forum, speaking of this week, is taking place in Washington, D.C., and they have projected some numbers. These are not an official set of numbers exactly for the 2022-2023 crop year. Those will come in May from the United States Department of Agriculture, and the WASDE figures then. However, this is a point at which many find the first set of numbers from USDA. They put acreage for corn at 92 million on 181 bushel the acre yield, and the average season cash price for the new crop at $5 for corn. That season's average cash price is $12.75, says USDA, in the projections from the Ag Forum for soybeans, at a 51.5 bushel to the acre yield, and on 88 million acres. What did you think of those numbers?
I think they kind of make sense from the USDA perspective that, you know, the bean number is pretty low when you look at what's going on in South America. The core number is lower. We're in the camp and have been for quite a while, Todd, as we talked about on Commodity Week months ago, that corn acres are closer to 90. But I think those are probably okay for what the USDA is looking at to start the season. But I think the cost of fertilizer, especially for corn and nitrogen, is a factor. And the bean price has rallied so much on new crop beans that we're in the opinion it might be more like 90 and 90 at the end of the day. But those numbers, again, another thing I like, when you look at the yields they're trying to use there, that's trend line. I understand that. But, gosh, that's a stretch in my mind to think we're going to set a record yield.
Well, I have a question about that. How much of an impact do you suppose the lack of availability of herbicides in particular will have on yield this year?
Well, I think it's certainly a concern. You know, I think producers are going to do everything they can to, you know, protect the crop. But the difficulty of getting what they want exactly, and there's still, I know producers who are still looking at the price of nitrogen for corn compared to you don't need that for soybeans. You look at the price of soybeans. So I think farmers will do it the best job they can to get things done. But I certainly think that they're going to cut back on P and K in certain situations because of the cost. It's just so extreme and availability. And so I think from the input side of the equation, to look at a record yield is one component that I just don't see that being there to push a record yield without perfect weather.
Any advice you'd like to pass along for producers at this time?
It's going to be, again, one of the most volatile years we could ever imagine. You can't get too discouraged on down days and too up on the good days. You just have to kind of work through it. But I think you're going to have to use some of these option tools to manage your risk. And I think, you know, your crop insurance is a valuable component of that. You just got to put in perspective that you're insuring a high-dollar crop. It's a good opportunity. And it's going to be a long season until we know the ultimate answer come this fall.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it.
That was Chuck Shelby. He's with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Philip Shaw is now here. He's a farmer from Dresden, Ontario, Canada, about 70 miles from Detroit. He also writes for DTN, a column, and has been a guest on our program before. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate that. Thank you for joining us on a Friday morning, too. And we did this because of the volatility in the market, and I suppose that's maybe where we should start. It's been extraordinary this week. What do you make of it?
Thank you very much, Todd. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been incredible. And, it's interesting, like, I made the statement this morning on Twitter that typically, you know, you talk about great volatility in farm prices, volatility in futures prices. And commonly we talk about that all the time and talk about greater volatility. But how many times do you have the opportunity to look at a grain market that is affected by a white hot war, where the prices of grain have been going up lately because of the threat of a war, and then you wake up and when it's actually happening and tanks are rumbling down the road, missiles and rockets are going through the air, as well as hostile aircraft in a part of the world which is a major grain producer. You see volatility like you've really never seen much before, because we're talking about the greatest military move since the end of World War II in Europe. And because it affects Russia and the Ukraine, which exports an awful lot of wheat and an awful lot of corn, which we don't get to export from this side of the world, we saw a huge volatility where we've had the run-up of grain probably a couple of dollars or $3 in the last few months. But then in the last 2 days, you know, we saw soybeans run up to $17.65 and then drop about another $1.50 over the next few trading sessions until we end up where we are now, where old crop soybeans are down 63 cents and new crop soybeans are down 37 cents. So if you go back to about Tuesday of this week, or even Wednesday of this week, which wasn't too long ago, we're about in the same spot, right? And, you know, this is where standing market orders come in handy. If you're an American farmer and you put a standing order in for a certain price that's not even thought of, when this white hot volatility comes around with the shooting war in a major grain producing area of the world, that's when the market orders hit. But it's not over. I mean, you know, sure, we've got the market down hard today. And it was up hard the other day, too. But it's not over because, you know, we don't know how this is going to manifest itself. For instance, yesterday there was an actual vessel that left Ukrainian ports that was hit by a missile. Well, you and I have known each other a little while. And when's the last time we even mentioned that? You know, it just has never happened. But frankly, when a missile hits a grain hauler in the Sea of Azov or the Black Sea or wherever it was, that's a major problem. You know, that's called instability. And so, you know, who's to say this volatility won't continue on the upside? I don't know. I just do know that this is a major fracture in the world. It's a major fracture in terms of how the Western world looks at Russia. And because we suddenly, you know, you and I go back a little ways, and because we have such a great grain growing region in that part of the world now, that this is very real. And it should be very real to you and I who talk about markets and farm news. And it's something we're going to have to deal with in the future. And even more so now that the fracture has taken place. So, you know, I can't emphasize enough how big of a deal, it has been.
So have you thought very much about what this fracture, this shift in the balance of maybe global trade might mean as it relates to the Western and the Eastern hemispheres? I'll divide them up that way, roughly speaking, but really I'm talking about China, Russia, Belt and Road sorts of things, with their supply chain between those countries. And they've not been the friendliest of nations in the past, but maybe that hookup might happen over the longer term. And then what does the shorter term do you think look like for just this one growing season and the price of crops and other commodities, oil, across the planet?
Well, it's interesting, you know, Todd. Frankly, I hadn't thought much about that until today. or even the last couple of days, because it's a big deal. And, you know, I know that I think you've traveled in Ukraine, haven't you? And you've been on Ukrainian farms. And like, for instance, I gave a grains presentation last year in Kyiv, virtually, because of COVID. I gave a grains presentation. And one of the grain traders that invited me, she tweeted out the other day, and she said, "If my grandfather knew that Russia, whose territory he defended at the cost of his life from Nazi troops, attacked Ukraine, he would die a second time." I just found that the most profound thing and the most chilling thing at the same time, because that's a person I know, and that's the person that invited me to speak in Kyiv last year. You've been on Ukrainian farms. So when you think about this, it's just an incredible moment. Now, with regard to your question, the Eastern and Western Hemisphere, you know, the sanctions that Western governments have put on Russia are significant. Okay, and I don't even want to begin to totally understand exactly what they all are, but they're very significant. And it is brought to my attention this morning that, you know, obviously they don't have too many friends left, and that's including the Chinese. And let me rephrase that. That obviously they don't have too many friends with, but the Chinese, I still have a relationship with them. And, you know, typically a lot of the grain, especially the corn, that the Chinese take, and I know they buy American corn from time to time, we want them to continue to do that, but they do buy a lot of Ukrainian corn. I think I heard an interview you gave a few, it wasn't too long ago, where we were talking about moving grain in the Black Sea by ship. I think you were talking to a Russian grain trader at that time. But anyway, so China now, to some extent, you could make the argument, is going to help bankroll the Russian economy. If you think about the pent-up demand that the Chinese have for not only consumer products, but agricultural products, and the Chinese economy is not the picture of health. It's pretty good, but it's not the picture of health. Now, the Russians may be relying on them much more because they don't have the options that they once had before this invasion. Now, having said all that, you know, when is the Russian incursion going to stop? Because the tanks are still rolling. And there's lots of nervousness in Eastern Europe, whether it's Romania, whether it's Slovakia, whether it's Poland, some of those are NATO countries, with regard to when these tanks stop. So you, myself, musing about how China will be affecting Russia in the future largely depends on when the tanks and the incursion stops and how long it might be. You know, in Canada, we actually share a border with the Russians, as well as you do in Alaska. And of course, I hope we don't have to worry about missiles coming over the pole. So there's a lot going on here, but with regard to China, there's some possibility that that relationship strengthens with Russia, simply because they have not joined in the chorus with Western nations. And as you know, China needs an awful lot of soybeans, and a lot of other grains, and you know, certainly Russian wheat at some point. And, you know, as you also know, we've had problems in South America over this past growing season where the crop has actually shrank below expectations. Still very big, but it shrank below expectations. In the last few years, the Chinese have taken every Brazilian bean they could find and more. So, yes, I do think that this is a major fracture. I do think that there'll probably be differences with regard to the countries in the East. Look at this versus the countries in the West. But the problem is it's still early with these tanks still rumbling down the road and nightfall in Kyiv. So it's difficult to say.
I must say my time, and I was only there 10 days in 2006. It was all in the eastern part of the country. Five of them spent in Kyiv and five of them in Poltava, which is to the south and to the east of Kyiv. I think what I learned at that point was that that nation as a whole was split, kind of at the Dnieper River to begin with, and leaned to the east towards Russia in the eastern part, especially the further east you went, and to the west, of course, from Kyiv back to the west. If I had to guess, I would think that Putin will take Kyiv, will offer half of it back, the half that's on the western side of the river. And if you looked militarily, once the road, the highway that runs from Moscow to the Crimea, and it's the only land route to the naval bases. And if that's what he wants, I think this could be over quickly.
Well, like I say, I'm not a military analyst or a political analyst, so I don't know. I don't know. You may be right, but maybe not.
Yeah, I know. I'm a farm broadcaster.
Yeah,
so
I'm not a military analyst, so I do not know. But the way I answer that question is like this, and I've done it. I write a column for DTN. I write for several publications across Eastern Canada and the United States. And the way I've always answered that is with regard to Russia and Ukraine tensions is see Stalin, okay? And I wrote that in my column last week. Like, just take a look at Soviet history and just look at the way that Ukraine was treated by the Soviet leader for so many years. And so I have a saying when I write my commodity commentary, the view from China is always different than our view. And, you know, I spend a lot of time in Asia, not particularly China, but South Asia. And the view from there is different when I'm there about China versus the way it is here. At the same point, when I tell my readers to think about Stalin and Google him and look at the history of Crimea, Russia, you know, you will find out much of what has gone on over time, and this is meaningful. And so the view from Ukraine this morning, you could just imagine what it's like, or the view from Russia this morning. There's a lot of diverse views. It's hard to tell, but it's probably different than here. And so it's hard for me to know exactly what may happen. However, the grain trade, whether it's from Russia and whether it's from Ukraine, will always be affected by the view of the history of the area that goes back thousands of years. But in recent times, just going back to Soviet times, where that area isn't treated particularly well. And you can get ideas of how that happens just looking at Soviet and Ukrainian history over the last 75 years. We'll talk about that.
Stalin treated the people of Ukraine with abandon and the resources of Ukraine inefficiently.
Yeah, that's right.
Both.
And even what that quote from a Ukrainian grain trader that I talked about her grandfather losing his life fighting the Nazis for the Soviet Union. And if he knew that Russia was attacking Ukraine again, he'd die a second time. So, you know, there's a lot of history there. And, you know, in our country, believe it or not, Canada and the United States were all one country after the just before the American Revolution. And then, but my American friends insisted on having the revolution, otherwise they'd call Canada. And I always tell them that. But anyway, my ancestors fled from the revolution and found their way to British land in Canada, and that's how we happened to get here. So our view from here is somewhat of a young view of the global landscape versus there, where you had absolutely catastrophic events shape their history, even over the last 75 years. That are still very, very real. And now with regard to the grain trade, you know, I'm sure that you had the opportunity to see some of the best soil you've ever seen before, even though you're from Illinois. And even and that's great soil too. I had the wonderful opportunity to speak in Kyiv about grain trade in the Black Sea and other areas. But the view from there would be different now versus our view, depending. You know, much will depend on what happens in the next few days. Much of the view will be shaped of what's happened in the last 2 days as well. So we'll just have to see what happens going forward. But China will still need, they will still need all the Ukrainian corn. They will still need Russian wheat from time to time. Now, you know, we're getting close to springtime, or closer, I should say. It's still February. We're getting closer. You would think that, you know, you would hope that Ukraine and others would be able to produce as much as they produce. But my goodness, when you're getting missiles sent into grain ships off the Black Sea, that's not a good sign. And it means there's going to be problems and more volatility ahead.
Philip, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's very much a pleasure.
Philip Shaw writes a column for DTN. You can find him online. Look for Under the Agridome, particularly on Twitter. His handle there is Agridome. He, along with Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, joined us on this February 25 edition of the program. You can find it online, listen to the whole of it on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org.